All right. Good evening, Q's Nation. Welcome to the Upstate Hoops Podcast, Upstate Orange Podcast on FingerLakes1.tv. I'm Jim Sinacropi, live inside the FingerLakes1.com studios in downtown Seneca Falls, New York. It's Sunday night, November 13th, 2016, and the 2016-17 season is underway as Syracuse defeated Colgate 83-55 on Friday night in the Carrier Dome. They'll host Holy Cross on Tuesday and then Monmouth on Friday as part of the Brooklyn Holiday Hoops Invitational. We're going to talk all about it tonight, along with Syracuse's first signing of their class of 2017, finally, and Matthew Moyer's decision to redshirt. Some great Orange trivia tonight on Connor's Corner, and we'll be joined by the professor, Brad Connor, in just a moment. But first, the Upstate Orange Podcast is brought to you by Generations Bank with locations in Auburn, Farmington, Geneva, Phelps, Seneca Falls, Union Springs, and Waterloo. Be sure to check out their mobile banking app or visit them online at mygenbank.com. So, Brad, how you doing tonight?
I'm great, Jim. How are you this evening?
I am doing well. It's we're 1-0, and probably will rise in the rankings this week when they come out tomorrow.
It would be would have been a shock for this team not to be 1-0 playing Colgate. We talked about that a week ago. They generally don't lose to New York State teams, especially in the month of November.
Yeah, and this was no different. Game was on ESPN3 or Watch ESPN app, which I'm getting used to that. I don't know how you feel about it, but it's easy. I can throw that up on my television. I can, you know, I can watch it on my phone if I'm out. So I actually had it on my phone a little bit live because I wasn't able to watch the game live, you know, intently, and then played it back later on ESPN3.com. So
yeah, I don't mind it as much either. I can take it with me. I was at a gym supervising a bunch of fourth grade basketball games this weekend, a tournament we hosted, and when I was bored watching fourth graders, I just pulled up the second half of the Lemoyne game, watched a little bit of that, and then a little bit of the Colgate game. So it's a good way to do it. If they could come up with a color guy that would add a little more insight to the game, I think we'd enjoy it even more.
Agreed. So let's get to it. We're going to talk about our Big Five topics first before we get to the trivia. So topic number one this week is the great point guard play for Syracuse. Frank Howard and the newcomer fifth-year grad student transfer senior John Gillen combined for 24 points, 15 assists, 5 steals, 6 rebounds, and only 3 turnovers. All 3 turnovers were Howard. But I think we're pretty set at point guard this year. What do you think?
I love what these guys can do at point guard. These two guys are the most dynamic point guards we've seen, certainly since Michael Carter-Williams. And the two of them combined, we'll talk about this a little bit in the trivia, so there's a little teaser for the trivia, but the having both of these guys, you know, you can interchange one or the other, but we saw a lot on Friday night where they were playing side by side, and you bring Gillen in and move Howard to a wing, and the way Howard's been shooting it recently, and Gillen we know can shoot it, it creates a great number of options that we didn't think they would have available to them. That I couldn't be more excited. And you heard me last week, Jim, probably, you know, hyping up John Gillen as one of my, you know, favorite newcomers, and nothing's changed on that point. I love watching him go. He can be such an engine for this team, and I love to see him. But I love Frank Howard too. I wanted to see more of him last year. We did toward the end. I love the way he runs the show, and you know, I am excited by the point guard situation on this team.
Yeah, I'm equally excited. It's fun because we've had point guards in recent memory that we're also looking to score a lot, and we got two pass first guys now, and if one guy's a little off, the other guy's going to be on. But you know, more often than not, these guys are going to be distributing, and no matter who's in the game, and setting up all their other great offensive threats, and that's why Roberson had such a big game. Though these guys just kept finding him as he was cutting to the hoop, and he just kept dunking it and laying it in. So I'm really excited about both these guys, maybe a little more excited about Howard because he's going to be with us, you know, for 3 years. Gillen's a hired gun, won, year and done, but man, it's great to see those guys passing. It really is.
And it's funny to watch Gillen play. I mean, we haven't seen a point guard that small on this team. Man, you got to go back almost to like Alan Griffin, you know, years long ago.
Yeah.
But he gets to the rim as easy as any of those guys, and he goes up and over big guys. So, you know, we haven't seen tremendous shot blockers that they've played against yet, but he seems to have a knack when he gets into the lane and into, you know, where the big men reside. He can get a shot off. He just kind of fires through the trees, and you know, if he's not available, he knows where guys are. And you know, one of the best alley-oop passers we've seen in a long time too. Certainly since Michael Carter Williams. And that's we always love that element of Syracuse basketball. And you know, you think back to the great alley-oops of Sherman Douglas in those days. And Tyler Roberson is going to be the beneficiary of a lot of that. As great a jumper as he is, Tyler Lydon's going to benefit from that. I think Torian Thompson, when he gets his gets comfortable, we're going to see that a lot from him. it's such an exciting dynamic part of the offense. You made a good point. You talked about that these guys are pass first point guards, and you're right. I thought that same thing of how we haven't seen certainly a pass first point guard since Michael Carter Williams, at least.
Yeah, and even he was more of a some games he'd look to score. Remember that game he had 19 assists?
Yeah, we thought he was going to set all kinds of records.
But, you know, even going back to, like, Johnny Flynn, we've had point guards that have been, you know, among our primary offensive scoring threats as well.
Right, yeah, Johnny Flynn needed to score on that team for them to be successful. Yeah. They had him, and they had Harris, and they had Devendorf, and, you know, between the three of them, two of those three guys needed to be scorers, and quite often it was Johnny Flynn.
And you can go, say, Brandon Trish is another one, and you know, even Tyler Ennis, you know.
Yeah, Tyler Ennis, when he hit the half-court shot, became a lot more of a scorer at that point.
But we got two guys, so that's the other exciting thing. And looking at the minutes they played, Gillen played 21 minutes and Howard played 22 minutes. So it's an even split, and I'd expect that to continue. Unless against some of the better teams, Gillen's size becomes an issue in the zone. But
I could see that. But I also think too, when you get into a close game down the stretch, I think you're going to want to see the fifth year senior out there probably more than you're going to want to see the sophomore who hasn't had a lot of career minutes yet.
Yeah, no, absolutely. He's this guy. That's the other bonus. We added a guy. He's a fresh face, but he's a 23-year-old man. He's a 23-year-old man. Frank Howard's
right.
20 years
right.
old, and he, you know, he's becoming a man now. But Gillen's certainly been through a lot and seen a lot, and you know, on and off the court. So,
yeah,
perfect situation there at point guard.
And I can't remember a time where we've had two guys that could be that interchangeable. I mean, even you go back to Sherman Douglas and Pearl Washington. Sherman never saw the court when Pearl was on that team. I don't remember a team that had two point guards that you could interchangeably plug in and out as effectively as I think they can with these two.
Yeah, and being solely point guards, because I think some of Brandon Trish's teams, you know, he shared the backcourt with another point guard, but you're not going to see either one of these guys playing the two, or I think it'll be, we may never once this year see him on the court at the same time, unless they're maybe trying to break a press late or something.
They went to it a little bit the other night, but yeah, you're right. There's so many weapons on this team. I don't think you need them on the court together very often.
But so that's just the tip of the iceberg in terms of the weapons that this team has brought in this year. And I think we were introduced to maybe our biggest weapon against Colgate with Andrew White III having playing more minutes than anybody else on the Cuse for 29 minutes, had 17 points, 5 rebounds. He also shot the ball 12 times, which is second only to Roberson's 13 shots. So I think what we saw here was that, you know, this guy's going to be our primary scorer from, you know, the perimeter, from the three spot. Even though Roberson scored more than he did, I think Andrew White's our scorer. And maybe when he's not, it'll be Tyus Battle. But Andrew White's legit, and it's another guy who comes in with tons of experience. And a lot of people are comparing him to Demetrius Nicholls. I can see that a little bit, but I think he's a little stronger than Nicholls. He may be even more of an all-around game than Nicholls, but hello, Andrew White III, right?
Yeah, he's more seasoned than Demetrius Nicholls. He's played going on 4 years of major college basketball, and at a fairly high level. Nicholls didn't really bust out until his senior year. Andrew White's been a double-figure scorer in major college basketball for a couple of years now. So I think he brings a lot more to the table than Nicholls did, though it remains to be seen if he can produce at that same level as a senior. He's a volume shooter. He doesn't pass the ball much. I will say that he gets it and he shoots it. So there's a little bit of reluctance to buy in completely to what he's selling, just because I noticed a couple times where he could have passed up for an easier shot, and he launched one that was a bit more contested, and so I'm a little bit concerned about that perhaps, but he can knock it down, and that's what this team absolutely needs. And when you've got point guards that can do what they, it's funny, like when you think about what this team has evolved to, and I think it has a lot to do with Jim Boeheim's involvement with Team USA in the Olympics. They've evolved into a lot more of an NBA style offense with, a drive and kick and guys spotting up from three, and it's either, you get inside and attack the glass, or you kick it out for a three. And by doing so, you need a reliable three-point shooter. I think Andrew White is that guy for this team. There's no question about that.
Well, it's also strange for me, I think, watching, the first few games, you see this guy out there. He's one of the studs on your team, and it's like, who is this guy? Where did he come from? Like, you got to get used to seeing
his face.
That's
the feeling of a Kentucky fan every year, isn't it?
Yeah, except for us, we're doing it on the other end. We're getting these fifth-year grad transfers, and they're getting freshmen. Like, it's fun with the freshmen, but it's weird with Gillen and Andrew White to see these two guys who are going to be such key contributors this year, come in out of nowhere. And, they're seniors. They're only, so we know they're going to be going pro or no going pro. It's just strange. It takes a while to get used to them.
That's got to be a challenge as a coach, right? Because you've got a group that's been together, even transfers like Chukwu. He was in the program last year, so he's just new in the sense that he's on the court in games. But these two guys, this time a year ago, no one knew these guys. The teammates had never even met these guys. And now they're here sharing minutes and sharing the ball and being part of what they're trying to achieve together. That's a tough thing for a coach, you would think, to be able to integrate these guys. And guys that you need to lean on is guys with experience and have been there and in big spots. And I, by all accounts, I think they're doing a reasonable job of that already. Mixing in new guys that are experienced guys with young guys that are freshmen, with guys that have been around. Daywon Coleman's been in this program for 5 years now. You've got a lot of different elements to this team, and it's not just one group of guys that's kind of stayed together all the way up through. So it's a challenge for Boeheim. And, they're reasonably easy schedule early on. It's helping ease their way into it. But that's something that they'll credit to him. If he can get these guys on the right path by the end of the season, that's a coaching effort right there.
Yeah, and you have to wonder how the chemistry issues are going to play out with this team. Right now, everybody's just starstruck with all the talent and the depth that we have. But, as we move into December and certain guys slump and certain guys don't get the minutes that they expected, you wonder if some chemistry issues could develop that could derail this team. But, if not, and it gels well, and I think there's a good chance it will gel well with this group from first, from what we've seen so far. And guys like, McNamara and Hopkins and Autry on the staff. And
even Devendorf now.
Yeah, Eric Devendorf. And I think Boeheim's handled enough of these teams to do his best to make it work. So, keep our fingers crossed that all these new faces, gel.
Yeah, I think generally speaking, it's a good group of guys. You don't see too many guys that are me first guys that demand the ball, that aren't team first guys. Daywon Coleman, he's been blood, sweat, and tears to get himself back on the court to support this team and this program. And Kyle Roberson's a four-year guy and has been around for a long time, and you know, is a high-energy, great guy. Everybody on the team seems to love him, and it's a good group. And you know, you think of some guys in the past that have been kind of me-first guys that have sort of derailed some good teams that they've had. I don't see too much of that on this team. So I think that'll help ease their transition into a unit over the course of the next couple of weeks that we'll see.
Yeah, I agree. So on the other end of things here, we have Tyler Roberson, senior edition. And I keep coming back to Rick Jackson's senior year, you know, how he was good for us his first 3 years. But his senior year, he was like All-American quality and, you know, super reliable and just seemed like he made a huge jump. A lot of guys make jumps freshman to sophomore year. Boeheim's four-year big men always make a jump on that fourth to fifth year.
And Rakeem Christmas definitely did.
Rakeem Christmas is another great example. So, you know, Roberson leading scorer with 18 points, only four rebounds, which was a little disappointing, but it's also these 18 points are maybe a little misleading. A 9 of 13 shooting, they were all layups and dunks. I mean, he was finishing in close off of great passes from the two point guards. But, you know, Roberson, I still don't see him as a senior. He still seems like it should be his junior year. But, you know, he is a senior and on a team that's expected to, you know, at least around these parts, be a national title contender. You know, he's got to play the part. He's got to be a double-double guy. Maybe not double-double on the rebounds, but he's got to be a 16.78 rebound a night guy for this team. And
I think that the point guard situation that we just described, there's nobody more excited about that than Tyler Roberson, because he's a guy, we've talked about this. I remember spending some time last year talking a lot about this. So he's a guy that doesn't have as much ability to create his own shot. He really needs to be set up. Now, he moves well without the ball. He gets to open space. You weren't always seeing guys finding him in the past. Obinnaji was a bit more shoot first, distributed reasonably well, but wasn't always looking to dish when he could get into the lane. You've got point guards now that if they know that Tyler Roberson's trailing the play, or if he's on the opposite baseline flying to the rim, they're just going to throw it up there and he's going to catch it and do something spectacular with it. He hasn't had that in 3 years. He's got that now. He's going to be leaps and bounds beyond where he's been just by virtue of the fact that he's got better point guard play that's going to look for him and set him up. Now, with that said, I have seen a couple occasions in these three games, the two preseason games and the Colgate game, where he has taken it off the dribble and done a little bit with it. He still struggles a little bit with a mid-range jumper. You know, that's been a challenge for him since he's been here. But I don't think you necessarily need that from him. You know, you've got Tyler Lydon that can play the high post. I don't think you need to put Roberson there very often. I think you just have Roberson run baseline and just alley-oops and putbacks, and I think he can be 10 to 15 points every night easily just on that because of the point guard play.
Yeah.
Rebounding will come with him. He's high energy. He's a leaper. Against a team like Colgate, all they're going to do is sit out and jack up threes, and you're going to get long rebounds, and Roberson's probably not well-suited to get long rebounds, and so I'm not going to make too much of the fact he only had a handful of rebounds the other night. I don't think that's cause for concern. But as a senior, I don't know if he's necessarily going to make that leap. I think it's a little bit different with what we saw with Rakeem Christmas, Rick Jackson, guys like that, because they were back-to-the-basket guys, and they really featured them and, you know, run clear outs and set plays for him. I still don't think you do that a whole lot with Roberson. I just think you've got the ability to get him more involved now with better point guard play.
Do you think Tyler Roberson is an NBA draft pick this spring?
No, I don't either. I think he can get a tryout, and I think he might be able to get into a camp and maybe get into a summer league, and just based on pure athleticism. But you've got to be able to extend when you're 6'8", which I guess he is. You've got to be able to shoot from beyond 10 feet with any kind of consistency, and I think that's where he struggles still.
Yep. Okay, let's move on. Speaking of big guys in front line, we maybe didn't get a true look at how Coach Boeheim's going to handle the number five against Colgate. We probably won't get a true look until we get into some of these December games like Wisconsin and South Carolina coming up first, and you know, Georgetown and UConn. But you know, looking here at the box score, at the minutes, you got Dewan Coleman with just 15 minutes, which I found a little bit surprising. Chukwu, 17 minutes, but I think also he's trying to get Chukwu kind of integrated into playing games. Coleman's comfortable, you know, when he's in there. And, you know, and then Tyler Lydon played more minutes than anybody else except for Andrew White at 26, but not much of that at the five. And then Torian Thompson, 18 minutes. These are all guys that could potentially play the five, and we didn't see anybody established as the guy who's going to be getting, you know, the bulk of the minutes, the 70% of the minutes. Is it going to be like a three- or four-headed monster all year long, or is Boeheim just feeling it out? Because I would think that it was going to be Coleman and Chukwu with the minutes leaning towards Coleman's favor. But, you know, Coach Boeheim certainly didn't lend us any insight into what might be when the real games start.
No, I don't think he's going to show his hand quite yet, but I don't think he's got any dominant centers in there that he's going to ride. Like the guys we just talked about, Christmas and Rich Jackson, guys like that. I don't think that any of these guys are as well-rounded as you need to be able to just put them down at the five and build an offense around them and make them your anchor. Each of them do something very different. Each of them do things very well. Each of them are, you know, still struggle from time to time. I was surprised too, Jim, you said about Coleman playing 15 minutes, and I don't think he was on the court much at all in the second half. And at one point, about midway through the second half, I, you know, thought how it was weird we hadn't even seen him. And you got to think fatigue's not an issue anymore, unless they're just worried about overworking his, you know, his knees and things that he had worked on. But yeah, it's disappointing if he can't play more than 20 minutes still.
He did have four fouls. That might have been part of it, but I didn't think it was the type of game where he had to be protecting his fouls.
You're up 20-plus in the first half. I'm not sure you're worried about Coleman staying out of foul trouble.
He was 3-for-4 shooting, 6 rebounds, a steal and a block, and an assist, and 1 turnover. So in those, very productive in those 15 minutes. Chukwu, on the other hand, was 2-for-2 from the field. 5 rebounds, a steal, a block, and a turnover in 17 minutes, but 0-for-6 from the free throw line.
That's going to be a problem.
Yeah, it's
that's going to be a real problem. And based on that, and it's admittedly small sample size, but you know, with a sort of limited offensive base to begin with, if it's a close game and Syracuse is up trying to protect a lead, I don't see any chance that they go with Chukwu in the lineup. Unless I think you need him when you're pressing, when they're down. And anytime they put the press on, as from what I've been able to tell, they've had Chukwu in, that he can protect the back line. And teams that will beat the press come up against him, and then they think twice, and then they pull it out. So I think if you're down, you're down, you know, 4 to 8 points, and you're pressing, you're trying to get back into it, you'll see him down. You'll see him in if it's late. Otherwise, I don't think you'll see him anywhere near the court in the last 10 minutes of the game. I think you'll go with a combination of Coleman and Lydon. Thompson remains to be seen. He did some good things. I like what he sees. I think when the rotation gets tighter, he may be the odd man out now that we don't have Matthew Moyer. I know we'll talk about that. But, you know, Boeheim does like to go with short rotations. I think I do think Thompson's got a lot to bring, but I think his skill set maybe overlaps Tyler Roberson's a little bit. So if Roberson's going well and not in foul trouble, I'm not sure you see as much of Torian Thompson.
Yeah.
So I do think you end up with a lot more of Coleman and even Lydon. And Lydon, I mean, you look at him. He's gained a lot of weight, significantly bigger than he was last year. I think he can handle the rigors of playing the five and playing inside against ACC competition, where last year it was a bit of a struggle for him.
Yeah, and he did I mean, for everything he did last year, he's going to be stronger and better this year. So, sure. Chuck Woo, you might see a little offensive-defensive situation towards the end of the games, because the one thing I had in my mind going into this season was that 7-2 guy in the middle of our zone. And I guess that remains to be seen again until we get some real competition with some bigger front lines where he may be needed, you know, in the middle of that 2-3 zone. Because the one thing, Christmas played it really well, but he blocked a lot of shots. But ever since Fab Mello, we haven't had that guy that was the complete zone, you know, when if you can get a prolific big 7-foot shot blocker in the middle of that zone, that's when it can be really tough, because you can extend and take more chances. Because when they split the seam in the zone and get to the paint, they don't have a shot, you know.
Yeah.
So that's why
Lydon can be a shot blocker. His timing's great. See the one play where he blocked three shots consecutively on the same possession.
Yep. Yeah. He's got that knack, and it's, you know, it's an all around thing with him.
Sure. But he is only 6'9". I mean, a guy's 7'2". He's got 5 inches on him. You'd like to see him be able to man that center a little bit more often if he can afford to have him in there.
So we'll see. Before we get to the big five, the fifth of our big five topics tonight, Tyler Lydon, 26 minutes. Tyus Battle, 23. That's a total of 49 combined minutes played, and they combined for 8 points.
And one for 13 shooting.
Yeah, it wasn't for lack of trying. They got their shots up. Lydon 0 for 3 from 3-point range, and Battle 0 for 3 from 3-point range. 4 of those points came from the free throw line. Battle was 4 for 4. But with as much scoring talent as we have on the roster right now, you guess you can afford two of your top six guys to have terrible shooting nights and still be able to score. So, I mean, that I think with both Battle and Lydon, it was just one of those nights, and they'll come back on Tuesday night, and those two might be our top two scorers.
Yeah, and the one thing you saw a little bit against Colgate is Battle kind of disappears a little bit. He doesn't have the ball in his hand all that much. When he does, sometimes it's a quick shot, sometimes he gets rid of it quick. I think he's still trying to feel his way a little bit. I think they're not really setting anything for him, and so I think he's sort of picking his spots, and they're not there yet. I think it'll come. You know, I think we wanted him to be more of a Malachi Richardson, and Malachi Richardson was a starter, and he needed to be on the floor, and he was, and was able to create some things for himself.
And
I think Battle can get there. I think it's just this is a pretty deep team now. There's only one ball, and there's a lot of minutes to go around.
And Battle's getting starter minutes, but he does have to probably adjust from coming off the bench. He's coming off a career where he was always the number one option on his team in high school, and now he's all of a sudden a sixth man, even though there's talk about him being drafted in the NBA after 1 year, and it certainly could happen. But he's coming off the bench as sixth man. That's just a different mentality, so there's probably some adjustment there, and it just wasn't his game. But he did knock down 4 free throws, which is nice.
Take that.
So with all this talent on the roster, old Matthew Moyer has decided to redshirt, which I was really happy to see it, because I don't want to see a guy waste a year. You know, you mentioned he would be the 9th or 10th option, you know, off the bench. And we don't really even know much about him. We haven't had a chance to see him play enough. But redshirt year, next year, coming off this roster, you're going to lose Andrew White, you're going to lose Guillen, you're going to lose Coleman, you're going to lose Roberson, and then potentially Lydon and Battle. I mean, that's Bam's going to be reworking the whole roster again next year. And Moyer, you know, will have his time next year. So I was really happy to see it. Real happy.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think he would have struggled to get minutes even if he was healthy. When he had the foot injury and over the summer, as soon as I heard of that, I pretty much assumed it would be a redshirt year for him, just because there was just too much depth on this team for him to have made too much progress during this season, really. I mean, he wasn't the most highly acclaimed guy coming in, so I think it was a little bit of a surprise, maybe. I don't think he was on too many radars when he signed with Syracuse, and so, you know, he's from Ohio, and I hadn't heard of him, so I said, you know, it's I think he's a guy who has some talent and can probably come along. You know, you think of a guy like Chris Joseph, who's probably similar in build and stature and game, and he was a guy that came in, you know, maybe a little bit under appreciated and developed into one of the, you know, great standouts in the last 10, 15 years. Hopefully you can see the same pattern with Moyer, but it's just going to be a little longer for him.
Well, think about all those names I just mentioned that are gone next year. The four guys that we definitely know are leaving, and then maybe potentially two more to the NBA draft. You know, that's six guys. That's our top six guys. Well, maybe not our top six, but...
I would say five of the top six. Yeah. Six of the top seven. Frank Howard might be the only guy that returns.
So that shows one thing, you know, how kind of stacked we are this year. But, you know, I wonder if Bayham will be able to pull it off next year. And we just did sign a recruit. We'll talk about him at the very end of the show. Our first of the class of 2017, which, you know, with being in the situation we are here and only having, you know, one signing, guy signed a couple days ago, starting to get a little worried about that. But he's probably got four or five grad transfers lined up again next year. That's going to be his new thing.
Yeah, that's right. It's one and done of an entirely different model.
So now we're just past a half hour into the show, and it's time for the one segment that we have. We used to have more segments, but this is the one segment, and it's a very popular part of the show. It's time for Connor's Corner Trivia. So what do you got for me this week, Brad?
All right, we talked about the great point guard play, and I told you how much I love seeing these two dynamic point guards on this team. And it's like having two kids. You don't love one more than the other. You love them equally as much. And I think that's going to be the case with these two over the course of this year. I think about, and I made a comment earlier in our discussion about, I can't remember a team that's had two guys that can be this interchangeable, two guys that can run the point and be equally as effective. Different style players,
yep,
but guys that can lead the team effectively, irrespective of their style. And so it got me thinking about teams in the past and how many of those types of teams existed in the Boeheim era. I haven't seen too many. So I was thinking about the fact that these guys, against Colgate, you had... John Gillen had six assists. Frank Howard had nine assists.
Yeah.
You know, could you feasibly have a team whose stats at the end of the year, you have two guys that average over five assists a game? I mean, that would be – there are very few teams in the country that could ever claim that.
Yeah, that doesn't
matter. So I'm going to ask you, Jim, can you think of a Syracuse team that has ever had two guys that average over five assists a game?
All right, so the question is there a Syracuse
in the Boeheim era
team in the Boeheim era that's ever had two guys average five or more assists?
Because at their current pace, after one game, these guys are both averaging at least six assists a game.
You know, my initial gut reaction is no. But if it was going to be any team, I would say it was the team with Sherman Douglas and Billy Owens. But I don't know if Owens averaged five assists. But that would be my guess if there was going to be one team. But my guess is actually no. There has never been a Syracuse team with two guys on the roster that averaged five assists a game.
So you're correct. That's a good call.
Okay.
There's never been a Syracuse team that has had two guys average five assists or more per game during the course of the season. Now, with that said, I have a list in front of me that I painstakingly compiled, going back through the Boeheim era,
mm-hmm,
with the number one and number two assist guys in every team. Again, shout out to orangehoops.org for the amazing data on this.
This is going to be hard.
Which team featured the guy that was the second? Well, let me rephrase that. The second ranked assist per game guy on each of these teams who was the highest assist per game on that list of the second ranked on every, I mean, first ranked is easy. I mean, you go down the list and you go through Sherman Douglas and you think of Michael Carter-Williams and Johnny Flynn and Jason Hart and Adrian Autry and guys like that. The second guy, second leading assist guy on any team, it's a little bit harder.
Yeah, it's a lot harder. I'm going to go with Billy Owens is going to be one of my guesses.
Billy Owens is a great call, and you're absolutely right. So in 1990, Michael Edwards was the leading assist man on the Syracuse team with 5 assists a game.
Oh, wow.
And second was Billy Owens at 4.6.
So that was the closest they ever came to the 5-5. It wasn't with Douglas. It was with Edwards.
That was the closest they ever got to 5-5. There were several others.
Brandon Trish on any of that list?
Brandon Trish never averaged more than 4 assists a game in any of his seasons. But he was, for 3 of his seasons, he was the second leading assist guy, but it was in the 2-3 range.
Right.
The second and third rank, there's a great irony about it, and I'll share it with you once you guess.
Part of me wants to say Devendorf, but I don't think he ever averaged 4 assists.
Devendorf was the second assist guy on 2 separate teams.
Right.
He never averaged more than 4.
Okay.
He averaged 3.9 behind Johnny Flynn's 5.3 in 2008, and he averaged 2.3 behind McNamara's almost 6 a game in McNamara's senior year of 06.
Am I going back? Is any of these answers going to... You know, I'm going to say, like, I want to go back real early, like early 80s, and say maybe Eric Sanifer.
Not a bad direction of where you're thinking, but it's
wrong
not
guy.
Sanifer.
Wrong guy.
Wrong guy.
Tony Red Bruin? Leo Routens?
So on one of the teams, Leo Routens was the leading assist guy, and the guy that was second on that same team, and this was going back to 1983, had the third most as the sort of second banana on that team of any second guy on this list.
And I don't have his name yet.
He was the second leading assist guy on 3 consecutive teams, this guy, in the 80s, 82, 83, 84.
And it's not...
Not Sanifer.
I'm trying to... Waldron was the leading assist guy, wasn't he?
Incorrect. He was the guy. He's the guy. Gene Waldron was second leading assist guy for 3 straight years.
So Leo Routens...
In 82, he was behind Leo Routens. In 83, he was behind Leo Routens. In 84, he was behind Pearl.
Wow.
And almost 4 a game he averaged. So in Gene Waldron's best year, he averaged 4.3 a game. And so in 1983, you had Leo Routens average 6.2 assists a game, Waldron 4.3 assists per game. So that was the third closest we've ever had to a 5-5. There's one other. And I mentioned there's an irony with the fact that this other duo is right alongside them on the list.
Going back to the early 2000s.
No, you don't have to go that far back.
No. Okay. Going back to, you got me hung up on the fact that there was an irony. 2010, we had Scoop was probably the leading assist guy. And then Trish, we talked about him though, right?
Not Trish. He was third on that team.
Couldn't be Deion Waiters, right?
No. No, before his time. So here's the irony about it, and this won't give it away. Leo Routens was the leading assist guy in 1983 when Waldron was second with 4.3 and they were almost 5-5. In 2010, Andy Routens was the leading assist guy, believe it or not.
Oh, so Scoop was the second guy.
Scoop was the second.
Okay, yeah. I gotcha.
So the number two and three on this list of closest to 5-5 both had a Routens as the leading assist guy.
That was my favorite team, I think, in a long time.
That was a great team. I feel so bad for that team, the way they ended up.
Firenze getting hurt.
You know what? Yeah, on that team, 2010, Andy Routens, 4.9 assists. Scoop had 4.3 assists. Again, close to 5-5, but not quite there.
And I did like that.
And I'll rattle down some more on this list. So in 1986, for Washington's final year at Syracuse, he averaged 7.8 a game. Raph Addison, 4.2.
Wow.
Close to a 5-5.
Yeah, I never thought Raphael Addison averaged more than 4 assists a game.
I didn't either. I was surprised to hear that one. We learned that one. Next on the list, 1979. Can you guess either the two in 79?
79, Marty Head?
Incorrect.
79, Sonny Spera? No. I don't think he played in 79.
This guy led the team 3 straight years.
He led the team three.
And this was his sophomore year at 79.
79-80, they went to the NIT that year. Or no, they went to the NIT.
No, 80 was when they were number one seed and lost to Iowa.
Oh my God! You know it's got to be Eddie Moss.
Correct. Good call. Yeah. Eddie Moss in 79 averaged 4.4. Second on that team was Dale Shackelford, 4.1. So between Dale Shackelford and Leo Routens, Billy Owens, three of the best passing big men this team has seen in the Bayheim era. They're all the only real forwards that you see on this list consistently. Because Dale Shackelford led the team in assists in 78.
And that's a team that had Roosevelt Bowie on it, who, to bring it full circle, was the guy we're talking about doing the announcing for Syracuse games.
That's right.
Yeah, that's great trivia. A lot of times you don't think about the second leading guy. I mean, this could be a reoccurring theme. You could do the second leading rebounder, the second leading scorer.
We're in the next era of Syracuse trivia now.
Yeah, we've had enough episodes now, but I think if you brought back some from a couple of years ago, I probably wouldn't remember.
You know, it's funny. I was thinking about assists too, and we have to caution ourselves to not make much of the first couple of games because, yeah, you mentioned Michael Carter-Williams had, 19 assists or 15 plus assists or whatever it was. And on that team, he didn't even average the top 5 assists in any season in the Bayheim era. He was number 6 single season assists.
Yeah, I was going to say it seems like the Bayheim teams of old would rack up more assists mostly in transition. It seems like the more recent teams don't run as much with as much regular.
Yeah, that's funny. I was thinking that same thing because when I was going through too, and I was adding up the first and second guys, and you look at the years where the number one and number two guys totals were the highest, 1986 was the first, then 89, then 87, then 88. So it was Sherman Douglas' 3 years and Pearl's final year. And then 2013 was Carter Williams, one of the best passing point guards we've seen in quite a while, this team. And then it was 83 and 84, again, Pearl's years.
Well, how much does a 19-assist game swing your average for the year as a year numbers guy? I mean, that's...
Not much when you're playing 35 games. That was a Final Four team, so they played a lot of games.
Yeah, they did. But, yeah, that's got to bump you up at least a half assist a game almost.
Yeah.
Maybe not.
This game, it's like an extra game. Yeah, point. 0.1.
Well, that's good trivia, Brad, tonight.
Yeah, thinking about assists. I love teams that pass the ball, and this team seems like it's one that's excited about passing the ball and finding open men and getting easy looks and easy layups, easy dunks. I love watching it, and I'm excited for this team for that reason.
Yeah, I'm with you. I'm with you there. So let's take a look at what's coming up here for the Orange this week. They start play in the, what do they call it, the Brooklyn Hoops Holiday Invitational. It's one of these things where, the top-seeded teams play home, and whether they win or lose, they're still going to advance. I don't really understand exactly why they do it this way.
Yeah, how would you like to be a Holy Cross knowing you could beat Syracuse and it doesn't even matter?
Yeah, you're not going to the Barclays Center. No. So, but Syracuse is, and even when they get there, it's predetermined who they're playing. They're playing South Carolina, but that'll be next week. This week, it's Holy Cross coming to the Dome Tuesday night at 7 o'clock, and then Monmouth coming to the Dome at 7 o'clock on Friday night. And Monmouth, you'll remember, maybe is the team that has the crazy synchronized dances on the bench.
I had forgotten that until you mentioned it.
Yeah, so that's something to look forward to, I guess. But these should be a couple of easy wins for Syracuse and more of an opportunity to pit for Boeheim to, you know, run all his horses and see what we got.
Yeah, guys have fun. Guys getting out on lesser teams and putting up 100 points. This team's got the potential to get 100 points, whereas a lot of the previous teams probably haven't. I think that should be the objective of this team in these lesser games.
One thing that was not a very bright spot against Colgate was how bad our press was. Like, you think, geez, you want to pull out a full-court press against Colgate, we should be stymieing them all, you know. We should be creating a lot more turnovers, I guess, than we did. But I know Boeheim was certainly upset with that in the post-game press conference.
Yeah.
But maybe this will be a chance for them to tighten that up a little bit and create a few more turnovers. And also maybe not get off to a slow start, because, you know, a slow start against Colgate finds us tied, you know, halfway through the first half. But a slow start against Wisconsin in Wisconsin might find us down 15.
Right.
And so it's and I don't sometimes when you follow one team like so closely, you start to think, you know, this team always seems like they get off to a slow start, where maybe, you know, it's just maybe that's not accurate. But it seemed a lot last year, even into the NCAA tournament, they get off to a slow start and dig themselves out of it. And sometimes they would fall short at the very end after making a great comeback. And, you know, sometimes they'd pull it off like they did against Virginia or Gonzaga. But it seems like Boeheim's teams of late have gotten off to slow starts. And that happened against Colgate, too. And it happened against Lemoyne, or Lemoyne, it was Indiana of Pennsylvania. Yep. So I don't know, you know, exactly why that is, but it seems to be a trend, or maybe I'm imagining it. I mean, do you see that as like a weird trend that's developing with Boeheim's teams?
No, I definitely do. I mean, you think back to just last year. I mean, we remember that team fondly because of the run at the end, and they got to the Final Four, but this team had a chance of not making the tournament, a very legitimate chance of not making the tournament, and a lot of their games in February and even January, they get out to slow starts against these, you know, middling kind of mid-level teams, and they really struggle. I mean, you remember the Clemson game. They lost to Clemson. You should never lose to Clemson if you're Syracuse.
Oh, is that that game?
Syracuse shouldn't beat Clemson in football. And they got it. They had a 6-8 point early lead, and they just kept at it. And this team never could get over the hump. And they struggled a lot of times with that. Pitt's the same way. If Pitt would get a 6-point lead, if Pitt gets a 6-point lead on this team, the way Jamie Dixon's team played Syracuse, you could never come back on that. They really struggled. ACC tournament, they had it, and they just got to the point where they were tied, and they gave it up at the end.
Yeah, you spend so much energy,
you're right?
Erasing that deficit.
Yeah.
So
yeah, that's a problem. I think having good consistent point guard play will help, because it just creates more options. You're not relying on Mike Benajay to shoot you out of it. You're not relying on Cooney to knock down shots. You're not relying on Richardson to attack. You've got guys that can probe, and if it's not Frank Howard, it's John Gillen, and if it's not either of those guys, it's Tyler Lydon creating something. Like, I think you've got a lot more guys on this team that can create, that I think will help you. You know, the other team goes on a 6-0 run, Boeheim can call a set and have a point guard create something of value for you, where I don't think you had that as much in the past.
Yeah. So Holy Cross, Monmouth, South Carolina State the following Tuesday, the 22nd, and then the South Carolina Gamecocks at 2 in the afternoon on Saturday, November 26th, the Saturday after Thanksgiving. That's at the Barclays Center. After that, it'll be a Tuesday game in Wisconsin, Madison, for the ACC Big Ten Challenge game, 7:30 p.m. tip on a Tuesday night. And then we got North Florida, followed by UConn. Now we're into December. UConn game at Madison Square Garden on a Monday night. Boston University comes to the Dome on Saturday, December 10th. Then Georgetown comes to the Dome 1 week later on Saturday, December 17th. And then you got Eastern Michigan, St. John's in the Dome on a Wednesday night. Cornell, and then after that, Happy New Year. So there's your December schedule. Certainly more exciting than most, but things have been trending that way for Boeheim and Syracuse over the past few seasons, too, with a few more your preseason. It seems like we've been adding a few games here, and now that we're not in the Big East, we're adding in old Big East teams on top of it, and this is a tougher schedule than most Syracuse schedules.
Yeah, I agree. It's good. You know, the commentators don't have anything to complain about. They're scheduling. They're good. You know, they're home. They're away. They're leaving the state of New York to go play in Madison, Wisconsin. I mean, I'm excited about this schedule. One thing that I thought was great, I was connecting the dots on this schedule. I was looking at it earlier. So when they play Connecticut on December 5th, every other game from that point through mid-January, every other game is against an old Big East foe. So they play Connecticut, and then 2 games later they play Georgetown. 2 games later they play St. John's. 2 games later they play Boston College.
Right.
2 games later they play Pitt. 2 games later they play Boston College. It's kind of crazy. It's fun. It's cool. It's exactly like we used to love to see this team play. It's just we have to play the Clemsons and Virginia Techs and North Carolinas and Wake Forest and amidst all that. But
well, we did say one of the saving graces of coming of this move to the ACC was there were so many Big East former Big East teams along with us, including Louisville, that it wouldn't seem like a total break. But getting UConn and Georgetown, St. John's on the schedule in December is great, and we'll get Villanova next year, I think. It's going to be a regular thing. We got to throw some Providence and Seton Hall in there too. Don't forget those guys.
Yeah, that'd be fun too.
So getting worried, looking ahead to next year that we don't have any recruits signed. Well, we finally signed our first one just a couple days ago. O'Shea Brissett, a 3-star small forward who's from Toronto. He's played recently in Henderson, Nevada, but moved back home to Ontario at Athlete Institute. He's 6'8", 195 pounds, chose Syracuse over Oregon, USC, and Memphis. So here's another guy in the vein of Matthew Moyer, not too highly sought after by the major programs, although he did, choose Syracuse over two Pac-10 teams in Memphis. Three-star guy, I don't even think he's top 100, but we got a guy. We got a guy.
And you know what? Syracuse has had great success with guys from Canada, from Toronto.
Yeah.
They fall under the radar because they don't play the same caliber competition, but Syracuse has had a pretty successful pipeline coming down from Canada.
And it's nice to get a guy like this that, that if he comes and he works out, we're going to get to know him very well. He's going to be here for 4, maybe 5 years, where we salivate over these, top 25 recruits nationally, the Tyus Battle types. And we celebrate when we get them, and then they're here, gone before they were here. So, O'Shea Brissett, we'll see you next year, young man.
Yes.
Couple other recruiting notes quickly here before we get out of here. Quade Green, who's a senior point guard at Newman Goretti in Philadelphia, home of our alma mater of Rick Jackson and Scoop Hardeen. He was in Syracuse for an unofficial visit. On this weekend, he was there for the Colgate game. He's the number 22 ranked player in the 2017 class, and he's going to announce his choice this Saturday. It's down to Syracuse, Kentucky, Villanova, Duke, and Temple.
So, pretty elite list right there.
Yeah, and again, there's a guy that if we get him, it might be for 1 year. I don't really lose too much sleep when we don't get these guys, but we need somebody. We need somebody soon. Otherwise, we're going to be fielding a team with 6 or 7 scholarship players and 6 walk-ons next year.
And they need point guard depth. I think that's what we've seen struggles with in the past is not having that depth at point guard, and they certainly have it this year, but we know John Gillen won't be here next year, and you know, this guy Green comes in and learns from Frank Howard for a year and is ready to take the reins, hopefully.
Another recruit in the crowd this weekend was Barama Sidibe. I hope I said that right. He's a 6'11 center at St. Benedict's Prep in New Jersey, making an official campus visit to Syracuse. He had previously visited Oklahoma State and Texas Tech. So, you know, there's a big guy that we might be seeing next year, too. So,
you know. Love the big guys. Know that zone.
So, contain your excitement. Holy Cross game is Tuesday night in the Dome. That'll be a big one. And but hey, it's fun. It's exciting. There was 23,000 was the attendance for Colgate for the opener. There's a buzz about this team. You know, the possibility that this could be a back-to-back Final Four type of thing. And we are in a golden age right now. If you are going by performance in the NCAA tournament, we are in a golden age right now for Syracuse. Yes, we are lacking that title since we last won in 2003, but I think I want to say, I could roll these numbers off my tongue at the end of this last spring, but I want to say 4 Elite Eights in the last 7 years. Is that right?
I don't know. I think
2 Final Fours.
Four
Elite Eights and 6 Sweet 16s.
Yeah.
In the last 7 right. years, maybe, but yeah. Well, Bayham's formula is working, and he might have the most talent this year of any of those years. And so, sky's the limit. And we'll be back next Sunday to talk about it again. Are you investigating my stats right now, or
I started to, but yeah. I couldn't.
Yeah, we're running too short on time, I think, for that tonight.
You don't want to wait for me to do my research.
But yeah, enjoy the games this week. It's going to be great weather up here in the Northeast again too, so no excuse not to get out to the Dome next Tuesday night or Friday night. And yeah, it's basketball season. It's here. Yeah, it's you're going to go to a Bearcats or a Louisville game soon, right?
I'll go to the game when they play in Louisville in February.
Nice. Well, that'll about do it for us this week here on the Upstate Orange Podcast. Thanks for joining us. We'll be back again next Sunday. Definitely next Sunday evening again next week. I know we rotate our schedule on Sunday from the morning to night. I think next week will be an evening as well. But you can check out our schedule at FingerLakes1.tv for the official start time. You can subscribe to our feed on iTunes, Stitcher, YouTube, or via RSS. We're online at www.FingerLakes1.tv/UpstateOrange. And so for the Professor Brad Connor, I'm Jim Sinacropi saying enjoy your week, everybody, and let's go Orange!